Yesterday morning, had the opportunity to preach to the congregation down there at Lavergne, ahead of Brother Ricky, and I still have the same thing on my mind, but I think a minister always makes adjustments, and this morning I was digging even deeper into this subject, some of the verses here, and it kind of changes the trajectory of my thoughts and all. But I'm going to go to book of Hosea. Like so many times when I go to one of the minor prophets, Brother Ronnie has requested that I give y'all time to get there. Sometimes they're hard to find. Obadiah is pretty small, and some of the others as well. Hosea, and I'll go over to Joshua again, as I did yesterday, but I don't intend to spend as much time over there. Get back over here and some more thoughts. Yesterday, I went ahead of, like I said, Elder Myers, and so you have to watch the clock and all, and so I just have so many minutes, but today it's open. I have a couple of hours, I'd be assured I will not take that long to profess unto you what I know about these things. But if the Lord blesses, you'll receive something, and He'll be glorified. Hosea is one of what is called one of the minor prophets, and minor prophets, that phrase, those words, I just assume, well, everyone knows what that means, and most do, or have their idea, I guess, what it means. And I don't think anyone would ever go to a definition of meaning minor prophet means it's less important. The dozen minor prophet writings in here versus the major prophets, think of Isaiah, so forth, Jeremiah. Their messages are intense and severe many times. And in fact, if you compare or contrast, Hosea and Daniel, Hosea is longer than Daniel, but I read this morning as I was reading through some things at home. I have a book that Elder Lynn Dalton put together on all of the books of the Bible, and so I was reading what he thought, his thoughts on Hosea, and also in general he talked about minor prophets versus major, and he said major prophets focus on the king, and minor prophets seem to focus on the kingdom. And also, of course, I just read that this morning, so now I'm thinking, okay, I really need to look at that and see, prove that to be true, and I'm sure it is. He was well-learned and respected minister. Hosea's message, his prophecy, it shows the love of God specifically, I think, for His people, the love of God for His people, and specifically for Israel, who were His people. They were a people, and they were God's, and yet. Whereas yesterday, one of the ministers had mentioned, as we read things and then we go off and then we have a quick thought of something, for instance, Hosea, and he brought up the Apostle Peter as an example and said, you know, when Jesus walked on the water and so forth, then you think of Peter real quick, what do you immediately go to? Well, he took his eyes off of him and sunk. Well, and he made a very good point. Peter walked out on the water. He was only one. He walked out there. That's not what we remember about him. Oh, he took his eyes off the Lord and he sung. but he walked out there and all. And Hosea, he was, as we'll see in a moment, he was told by God to marry, go find and marry a harlot. One who he guilty of not only the lewd the life that she led, as we think of a harlot and so forth, but idolatry. We have to keep that in mind, because he immediately ties it to Israel, this whole thing. And still, I think let me go ahead and read the first couple of verses, and then I'll comment. The word of the Lord that came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, and really that's all, pretty much all we know as far as his genealogy. Son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, southern kingdom, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, the northern kingdom. This is when, and I don't know what age I was when I finally realized that the Israel from Jacob changed Israel and this people, that they weren't just one nation geographically or otherwise the whole time. They were divided at some point. At this point, when Hosea prophesies, he does it to a divided nation. Israel is in the north, Samaria being their capital, and then Judah in the south, Jerusalem being their capital. So that's how that's set up. And it helps me to think of even Hosea and the other prophets on where they're prophesying and all geographically. But to get a picture of everything. So he prophesied, but it mentions the kings, these four kings of Judah, the southern kingdom, where Hosea was not. He prophesied in Israel, the northern kingdom. Judah had their own issues over and over, as did Israel, as did the combined kingdoms being one. It gives us a time frame here, and minor versus major prophets. Hosea probably prophesied longer than the other prophets, and any of the other prophets, time frame that he prophesied. We only know that because of where it says he prophesied during these certain kings and so forth. You can narrow that down, and I guess not a huge deal to know, but God gives us these details, and it's if you study the history of the church itself, and even go back into the Old Testament, that's in here. The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. And the Lord said unto Hosea, go, take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, and for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord. So he gives the reason that he tells Hosea to do this, and yet I know, I can feel certain that if I was Hosea, I'd still ask, okay, yeah, I see why you're doing it, because Israel is in this situation, this deep idolatry to Baal, the gods of Baal, and all. But okay, now I'm supposed to live this life. I'm supposed to take this wife, this Gomer is who he married and took as his wife. And so he lived this in, not really mirroring, but lived in conjunction and right there parallel with Israel. And it wasn't Hosea. Hosea was the husband. He was faithful. And we think of God, the husband of Israel, was faithful. He's never unfaithful. Jesus Christ never is unfaithful to us. God is not. So Gomer, his wife, was unfaithful. She bore, and when I've spoken on Hosea, tried to preach before on Hosea, this prophecy, and just pretty much stayed here, although we can go to other places and see references and all to this prophet, I'd concentrate more on Hosea and his life. And yesterday I didn't, and today I don't feel led to do that. They had three children, Gomer and Hosea. Even their names, I know two of the names, the second children, meant the meaning was not loved, and the other was not my people. That's how severe, and God decided those. That's how severe God looked at Israel at this time, and then Hosea mimicking or that the Israel of this land, the same thing there. But then, as I like to do, and as God always provides in these prophecies, is the hope and the joy and the rejoicing, the hope in God. And that's where I'm headed here in this. So now you know just about the prophet Hosea, his natural life, his marriage, and so forth. And his wife ended up leaving, being unfaithful to him, to Hosea, left him, and then actually ended up in slavery to a man, and was in that life. And so we'll see though some good then that also shows us Jesus Christ. And there and in the prophecy of Hosea, there is redemption. There's redemption. Hosea buys her back. It's one that was already his, but he had to buy her back. Jesus Christ. He redeemed us. We're already his, but he bought us back. He bought us back. Did Hosea have every right to let her go? Yeah. God could have left us as and he could in Adam where we were. Anyway, I don't want to take a lot of time on these things, but I'm going to jump to the second chapter, the 15th verse, and again touch in Joshua for a couple of moments and come back here and then kind of work my way through these verses, which I really didn't have time to do yesterday. Hope the Lord blesses. Please continue to pray. And I will give her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Achor for a door of hope, and she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, and as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. Certainly talking about Israel. And the state that she's in here, again, I'm gonna back up here. But here is what, and as when I jump from, or not from where I was, I guess, but what I just described in Gomer, his wife being unfaithful and so forth, and in her and Israel the same there, then I jump to here. It's like, my goodness, well, that's see the mercy of God, the love for his people. That of what he could do, as we see, and we'll see his wrath, his anger in a moment in Joshua, in the book of Joshua. But we jump to here, and so this is what God does, but he doesn't let the sin go. There's judgment there. So in this little minor prophet, what is there? I think 14. Chapters maybe or something in this book, but there's so much in here. Now I'm going to jump to Joshua the sixth chapter at this point, and again not spend as much time here as I did yesterday. At least that's what I intend to do, and we'll get back to the good in this. But this Valley of Achor. A-C-H-O-R, I believe is how it was spelled. we see here where that came from, this Valley of Achor. And then we'll see what it means. And what it means when he turns that from and the Valley of Achor to the Door of Hope. Valley of Achor. Achor means trouble, confusion, destruction. That's what that Achor means. I've gotten to where I do go to the, because I would imagine first read that word, and I would say sort of like acorn, but I try to go and get the audio of pronunciations of some things. Once I get two or three of the same pronunciation, okay, maybe that's it. Sometimes there's pronunciation in our Bibles, and it says that, but that's the way it seemed like it was pronounced. Not important, but it's nice that we're blessed with the technology we have today to do things like that. But in this sixth chapter, and I'm going to just kind of paraphrase some of this and go through this history here, but they have, they're at Jericho. Israel's at Jericho. So many years before, and they are blessed, as it says in the 20th verse. They took the city, they won, and y'all are aware of that. That's nothing new. They won this battle. The walls, there's a song, and children's song. Some of the walls came tumbling down, and all the trumpets and so forth. They won that battle. God was with them when they won that battle, or they would not have won it. And a large city there, and they had help with Rahab, the harlot, right there, that helped the spies that went in. And so forth, but they won the battle there, but they were told by God that city Jericho would be accursed. It would be accursed. That's a pretty strong, severe word there from God, and even it and all that are therein, everything, everyone was accursed in that city. Except for Rahab, the harlot, and all that are with her in the house. She helped. She assisted them. So God blessed her with mercy there. And ye in any wise, keep yourselves from the accursed thing. And this seems very easy and straightforward. That's all accursed right there. You go in, you fight the battle, we'll win it, and you leave it alone. not all of it. He says then, silver, gold, vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. What these things they were commanded to take were consecrated to Him, to God. In that, we're given certain things in our lives, and we don't make physical sacrifices and so forth, but anything good that we have is from God. He won that battle. They would not have won it. They get these things. You consecrate these things to the Lord. Again, this is very simple that even I understand what I'm supposed to do in that, if put myself in there. And I do. I picture myself in these situations. What would I do in this case and all that? So they're consecrated unto the Lord. So they won the battle. And then I'm just going to jump all the way to try to get through the seventh chapter real quick of this, of Joshua. And as I noticed yesterday, as I was preaching, first verse in the seventh chapter begins with the word "but." But this doesn't look good. Doesn't look good. It looked good. They won the battle of Jericho. All this, the gold, silver, brass, and so forth, consecrated to the Lord. Everything must be going great. So many times in God's word, in these prophets, everything's going just wonderfully, enormously well. And then, nope, something go, the Hebrew people do something. In Israel, in Hosea's time, Israel was doing that northern kingdom, they were doing great economically, prosperous, very prosperous. But spiritually, they're bowing down to false gods. Oh, they're not doing what? Now, they might have looked, say, look at how well, how blessed we are, and of our gods. And we've got all, we're all rich, we're prosperous, we have food and all. And so it may appear, oh, everything's going fine, but it's not. And Hosea prophesies because of that. But it says, but the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. Now you know what that is. That's anything in, anyone in that city of Jericho. Don't touch it. It's accursed. Do not take anything except this, and that's separated, set apart for God. They committed a trespass in the accursed thing. For Achan, A-C-H-A-N, Achan, much like Acre, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed thing. There's one, they say, saying the one in every crowd, there's one that took of the accursed thing. Up to this point, it doesn't say that anyone knew of that sin against God, of taking of the accursed thing. And I can, just knowing myself, I could say, well, oh, I know why he did. Number one, he thought, okay, nobody will find out. We'll see in a moment if I go there, but he's got all this stuff stashed in his tent, hidden, you know, under whatever and all that's in there. Someone knew. I tell you who knew? God. God knew. But he stashed it all in his tent, and had God not shown the importance here of this, and as we'll see in a moment, his anger toward them, then they may have never known that they did that. But and they knew in their next battle. They knew in the next battle. And Joshua learned a lesson as well. So they all did. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. Again, I guess I start a lot. My first thought, I confess what I first think in my human nature, but this was one guy, one man, out of all this great nation of Israel that took these things. That's all it was. So this severe, it kindled the Lord, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. Not just Achan, the children of Israel, all of them. Here, it's like, okay, we'll see what the Lord does and as a result of his anger being kindled here again. They then go and they take men and they go to city of Ai. A-I is how that's spelled, I-E. So they go to the next battle. Here and to battle. It's a smaller place. It is not as great of an army. It's like, look how good we did at Jericho. So this is going to be a breeze. And immediately it says that they lost 36 men. Let's see, the people. It tells how many went up there, and the men of Ai in the fifth verse smote of them about 36 men. So they did not win that battle. I don't know at this point in Joshua. It says that the children of Israel in that first verse, and the anger of the Lord was kindled, and so they go, and then we know the reason, and we'll see in a moment. It says again in the 11th verse of the 7th chapter, Israel hath sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. For they have even taken of the accursed thing and have also stolen and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. So it's among their own stuff. So a couple of things. Achan took of the accursed thing. He hid it in his tent that it says down here and around the in the same chapter down around the, I think, the 20th. First verse or so. Anyway, what all he took and so forth. But also, he did not consecrate it to the Lord. So he missed the boat on two different things here that would not work out for Israel. So again, I'll emphasize, it's not Achan. The Lord's not, his wrath is not kindled specifically or only exclusively to Achan, this Israelite. It's the children of Israel as a whole that he's angered with. Now, the 25th verse, and then I'll try to jump back over to Hosea, tells us the severity of the wrath and anger of God, the importance of this, certainly a commandment of God, and the breaking of the covenant, which was never on God's part. He's not a covenant breaker. We are. Israel was. Joshua said, why hast thou troubled us? To Achan and his family. Why hast thou troubled us? And again, remember, Valley of Achor, that means trouble, destruction, confusion. He's the. And again, I won't go to it, but First Chronicles, it calls Achan the troubler of Israel. The troubler, so this trouble is here. Certainly can't apply with the stuff that I get into. Why hast thou troubled us? Then he tells him, the Lord shall trouble thee this day. The Lord shall trouble thee this day. Now, define that. Just that one phrase right there. How would the Lord, has the Lord, you know, troubled any of us, any of you? The Lord will trouble you this day. Now, I immediately, because I have so much mercy in my life and grace from God that he does not trouble me, that I immediately go there. Well, I'm glad it's God that's going to trouble me because he has mercy and I know he loves me. He loves me with an everlasting love, the same depth of love. But we don't know. What do the Lord shall trouble thee this day? And that's the end of that sentence. And so we don't know. Well, then we find out how God troubled. Yeah, you know. You probably read ahead. And all Israel stoned him with stones. Okay, we know how the Lord troubled him. Israel stoned him with stones. And again, I'm the one of the ones throwing the stone. Even, you know, he that was without sin cast the first stone and so forth. It's like he just took a few things and put them in his tent. This is really severe and intense here. But it's God and it's the justice that God, a righteous God, has every right to give to his people. And burned them with fire. So they stoned them to death. They burned them with fire after they had stoned them with stones. So that's how the Lord is troubling Israel here, troubling Achan. And they raised over him a great heap of stones unto this day. So the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger. They did what he said. They stoned them. They were told what to do. And then they put heaps of stones on there. And the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger. I always wonder right there, okay, had they not done what he said, okay, what then would have happened? I speculate on these things. I don't want to. I don't want to think about it if this was so intense here. Wherefore, the name that place was called, the Valley of Achor, unto this day. There's the Valley of Achor. You see why it, probably too tedious on my part, but you see why it's called that and what event brought that on there of this, of Achan, this Israelite, and it is the entire family of Israel that suffered. Now, back to Hosea, and I'll bring this together. God tells Hosea to go back, to go to where Gomer, his wife, his unfaithful wife is, and to redeem her, buy her back. Again, he did not have to do that. Hosea didn't. He says in the third chapter of Hosea, first verse, then said the Lord unto me, go yet, love a woman beloved of her friend, yet an adulteress, according to the love of the Lord toward the children of Israel. This stuff is linked together. It's connected. Hosea's wife, Gomer, this adulteress, and Israel. According to the love of the Lord toward the children of Israel, who look to other gods and love flagons of wine. So I brought her to me for 15 pieces of silver. I bought her back for a certain number of things here. And I said unto her, thou shalt abide for me many days. Thou shalt not play the harlot, and thou shalt not be for another man. So will I also be for thee. Afterwards, shall the children of Israel return, seek the Lord their God, and David their king shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. So in God's work here, through this prophet, through this minor prophet, Israel turns it around. They are turned to where they come, return to the Lord out of all those gods, those false gods. I would ask you to apply this to your life. We don't have, as I've said before, talking about idolatry and so forth and our unfaithfulness to God, that we don't have gods such as this, but these things that get in our way that we concentrate on. And they had that. They bow down to these gods. And look at the commandment that they're breaking there. They will return to him. Now, how did God in this case, because I've skipped some stuff here, how did they all of a sudden, and now Gomer did come back to Hosea and all, and was faithful and all, but okay, how did Israel, how were they convinced? It says that they did, they shall return, seek the Lord, and shall fear the Lord and his goodness. So something had to happen. Now that's where, and I'll begin to head toward, try to wrap this up. Back in the second chapter here, the 13th verse, and there's, I want to concentrate on this contrast here. It says, and I will, in 13th verse, second chapter, Hosea, and I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, this idolatry, false gods, wherein she burned incense to them. This is Israel. She decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgat me, saith the Lord. This is the Lord talking here. So that's all pretty bad. That's pretty bad. So I'm thinking, okay, before I go to the next verse has got to be some more stoning or fire burning stone, something. But it's not. It's not. This is the Lord. This is your God. This is Jesus Christ. This is a picture of him with us. Just here, we're the 13th verse. We're the 13th verse. You notice I'm not saying I'm the 13th verse. I'm including myself. We're all that in our lives. That's us. We were that, certainly, in totality, before being born again of the Spirit. That was us. Thanks be to God, I don't remember it, but maybe if I did, maybe I'd have something that I could contrast my life now to. But he gives me what I need. And then I fail him. So the next verse here, then, therefore, so that's why I had to read the 13th verse, because that 14th verse starts with therefore. Okay, what's it there for? I hate that I think of Mike Montgomery every time I read the word therefore now, because he explains that, you know, what it's there for. Anyway, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness, the desert. Okay, that's not so great. Okay, it's a wilderness, waste howling wilderness, a desert and all, but I will allure her, and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. Okay, well, after reading the 13th verse, that's not what I expected. This is what he's going to do to turn that around. And that's what God did. And and that's how he works. And whether Friday night Andrew spoke on when David, when Satan provoked King David to number Israel, and went through that and was really blessed in that sermon, and obviously provoked the same. So he went headlong into that. Then he prayed, you know, asked God for forgiveness and so forth, restore me and all. Just, you know, it's the same things, different scene there. But Israel here, and God bestowed mercy on David in that as well. And here, the same thing in our lives. And so sometimes either we're provoked by Satan to go into something, and I love the point. Let me hit this and move on. But a point that Andrew made that David, being provoked of Satan. So David did not go out and number Israel. If you were wondering about, he got a couple other guys to go and number Israel. He was provoked of Satan. He knew, no, y'all go do that for me. I'm the king. I'll stay here. You go do it. And they did it and so forth. But being provoked of Satan. Or we just end up somewhere, quote unquote, innocently. And then God turns us. He allures us. He speaks words of comfort. That's how God does it. I've talked about how a minister, a pastor, should not lord over the church. He's called the spiritual leader, if you were an overseer, but not to lord over, not to beat them half to death, to get them to do something. We should try to mimic our shepherd, the good shepherd, and lead the flock. And I'm much more comfortable with that myself than just throwing out orders and so forth. And maybe I should try this at home more. Allure and so forth. Comfort and ask. But that's the way God does it. He speaks these words of encouragement, this alluring. But then it says, bring her into the wilderness, this desert. How are we allured today? By His grace, by His word, the power of His word. When some depraved, wretched preacher preaches on depravity, and then that there's words of alluring in that, then we see we should end up where we're brought now. By God, by Jesus Christ, in redemption. Bring her into the wilderness, desert. I tell you what, Lord, and then in the desert, there are no distractions there. We've got nothing, and we're going to listen to what God has to say there. And so He allures her out, the Israel there, into the wilderness, and speak comfortably unto her. We see that. So this desert here, this wilderness, it's used to speak words of comfort and with total attention on God. That's the way we should be, even in the lush valleys of the Elder James Conley yesterday preached on some on the valleys and the hills and so forth, but these lush valleys and where that water flows and so forth. Even when we're there, our attention should be on God, and Israel's attention certainly should have been on God and not Baal and those gods and their prosperity economically there materially. But in the second chapter, the third verse. It says, it speaks of, lest I strip her naked and her as in the day that she was born and make her as a wilderness, a desert, and set her like a dry land and slay her with thirst. That's talking about using it as punishment. Now he allures Israel there to this wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. That brings us back to our 15th verse here. And I will give her vineyards from thence. How many vineyards grow in a desert? There's none. You see the oasis and the water. Haven't you run across a well or something? It's green and lush around. Now, I'm not talking about that. But when they see that, when I will give her vineyards from thence, this desert, this wilderness, then that's a miracle. That's miraculous. And so we're going to see that. Israel would see that. He's alluring her there and then speaking comfortably and comfort unto her and giving her vineyards from thence. And the valley of Achor, valley of trouble and destruction that I wander through all the time in my life. We can speak eternally on this or here in time, this valley of trouble that either I have somehow lost my way and wandered into that valley of Achor, the confusion and devastation and destruction, or Satan provoked me as he did David, the apple of God's eye, into that valley of trouble or end up there. But so we walk in that so many times. The valley of Achor, he will give from thence, and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. He's going to change that, a door of hope. How can he? God's going to change this valley of destruction and trouble and confusion to a door of hope. And I'm thinking, after I just read that 13th verse, and this is what you're going to do? Yeah, because he's merciful. Also in that, and this is something that we can take home. I like it from a sermon. We can take something home and then use that in our lives. But Andrew also made the point in the punishment that God gave David in the punishment for numbering Israel. He gave him three choices. Here's the three punishments, and I'll let you choose. And I have an anxiety attack just thinking about that. Which one of these am I going to choose? David chose the one that seemingly looked like the shortest. This is 3 days. This other one's 3 years, famine and so forth. This one's 3 months. This one's 3 days. I'll take that one. It's going to be over fast at least, whatever it is. But it was going to be of the Lord. The Lord would trouble him, if you will, for 3 days. And so the reason David did that, and you go back and read that, in Psalm, it was in the hands of the Lord. The other two was more of man. God is merciful. I'll choose the trouble that God would put on me, whatever length it is, knowing too that I well deserve whatever it is. So we have that picture there. But he changes this to a door of hope. And she shall sing there. This is prophesied as in the days of her youth. This restoring, this refreshing that David so often prayed for. And now Israel again needs this here. And God gives it to her. In the days of years, and as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. And that was a time, that freedom, that liberty given unto them out of slavery. Now, how quickly did they go and bow down to a golden calf and so forth, and deny God in that and go into idolatry pretty quick. So they started right off the bat, but they felt that freedom, that being freed by this liberator, this Moses there at that time. Now, let me end this in one more verse in Isaiah. And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that she shall call me Ishi and shall call me no more Bali. So she'll call me no more. Apparently they repented of that and no more call me that. Ishi means my husband. Now think of Gomer and coming back. What all she had done against her husband, unfaithful and all. And then he went and redeemed her, brought her back. And now she, and no more call me Bali, master, my master. What's more intimate and loving and personal? Calling someone, you're a master or my husband? My husband. So yeah, they'll no more, they'll call me my husband there. Now in Isaiah 65, where I closed yesterday as well, but 65, and I'll close, 65th chapter of Isaiah. The 10th verse. And this is so much here in our lives. Think of this when we suffer these things. We bring this trouble. We're in the valley of Achor. But it says, and Sharon shall be a fold of flocks, and the valley of Achor a place for the herds to lie down in, for my people that have sought me, that have sought me. They get that peace there. We deny him. We betray him, desert him. Had I lived back at the time, at that time of the arrest of Jesus I'd been like Peter. And what's that? What's the thing we think of then about Peter? Oh, he denied Jesus and all. But then he's blessed. I put myself in all of these. Achan, this troubler of Israel. I don't want to be known as a troubler of the church. And you can go to 1 Corinthians 12:12. I won't go there. And some before and verse after talks about all the members of the body of Christ. We all go together to make up the church, members of, just like Israel. Achan was Israel. And it was a people. The people had betrayed, broken the covenant of God. And so he punished them as they should, and then bestowed mercy upon them. That's the love of God. May God bless you.
Forgives all of our sins. Precious Lord, we would sing a song now. Open the doors of the church. And what song do you have?
Number 93.
If anyone has a desire to join.